This week we're going to look at a section of scripture where we are taught some, I believe, really erroneous assumptions based on our own culture and what we expect from weddings and from romance and marriage and all that stuff, you know, as well as some severe anthropological leaps of faith being passed on as concrete facts. So let's get to it. This is a parable of the wise and foolish virgins. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, and 5 were wise. For when the foolish took out their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. But at midnight there was a cry. Here's the bridegroom! Come out to meet him! Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourself. And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered, truly I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day or the hour. Oh my gosh. So we have that, you know, we've been talking the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the biblical context of, being cast into outer darkness, weeping and gnashing of teeth, and the phrase, truly I say to you, I do not know you. You can actually find that one up on my my podcast channel. And actually, to introduce that, I'll just go ahead and do my intro. Hi. I'm Tyler Dawn Rosenquist, and welcome to Character in Context, where we explore the historical context of Scripture and talk about how it bears on our own behavior and witness as image bearers. You can find my teachings on my websites, theancientbridge.com and contextforkids.com, as well as on my YouTube channels, which are accessible from my websites. You can also access past broadcasts like the one on outer darkness and weeping and gnashing of teeth on my podcast channel, characterincontext.podbean.com, which also links to my iTunes channel, and my context books for adults and families are available through amazon.com. So, this is the second part of the Therefore You Must Be Ready series, third part. Because I did add that teaching in about the historical context of what it meant to be cast into outer darkness, what the weeping and gnashing of teeth meant to Yeshua's, you may call him Jesus, his original audience, and what it meant and did not mean to be told, I never knew you. So I hope you've seen those. If not, you'll just have to catch up later. So, these are Yeshua's words to his disciples about the kind of lives that they and we must live until his return. Being that he was very clear in Matthew 24 that we will all be caught unaware, and it'll be very easy to be living as though we are asleep. Now, last week I talked about the parable of the faithful servant at the end of Matthew 24, and how important it is to God that we serve others and not abuse them in any way. We are all fellow servants, and none of us are the master. And remember, we serve a master who died for people, even for people who, you know, who were his enemies. Okay, so we need to be servants of that master, and that is also another important, we'll talk about that, we're especially talk about that next week. But this week we're going to discuss the 10 virgins of Matthew 25. Now, here is something that not very many teachers will admit to you, and I'm going to admit it to you. We really know woefully little about marriage ceremonies in the world of first century Judaism. Given all the teachings out there giving so many details, that really shocked me once I started digging. Much of what is passed around as accurate comes from much later documents, or is presumed from other cultures, and especially from modern Arab ceremonies. But I mean, that is 2,000 years worth of time between those two. We gotta be careful. But the truth is, you know, that much of what is out there is guesswork. And I don't mind guesswork. I don't mind people saying, well, this is what we see in Arab marriages. It sounds, you know, maybe they do this. But a lot of times what happens is you'll get a scholar and they will, well, I don't know if I want to get into that. Some of the stuff out there that talks about this stuff, about the Arab marriages, about other cultures and everything, they were published with clear warnings that it was anthropological guesswork. But then others read the papers and books, and sometimes they maybe don't understand scholarship, and they passed on the information as established fact because people like to sound authoritative sometimes when we really actually don't know as much as we think we know or we claim to know. You know, and I see that an awful lot out there with people being led to believe that they absolutely have proof of things that we really don't know for sure. But, and especially when it comes to marriage, because there is this real push, and especially with women, speaking as a woman here, to really want the romance of that whole thing as though this whole marital relationship that's being described in scripture is by modern standards and not just by the simple social contract that existed in ancient times that was for the purpose of providing a man with heirs and a woman with stability. Contract between two families. No romance involved. Very rarely did husband and wife love each other. They didn't spend any time together. Just about, except for at mealtimes and at night. Yeah, it's the way it was. Men had their sphere and women had their sphere, and rarely the twain did meet. So, anyway, but as for this bit, I can give you some pretty decent probablys based on what we do know about Greco-Roman wedding processions, because that's what this involves. Okay, this involves a wedding procession, and it looks like it involves some other things. And I'm going to talk about what it looks like in terms of the parable. So this will be not only a teaching about that, but it'll, you know, on top of the whole series that we're doing about what it means to, you know, what he said, therefore you must also be ready because you do not know when your Lord will return. Okay. So, all right. But there's still a lot of guesswork because people living in a culture, writing to other people, living in a culture, don't spend any time explaining what everyone already knows. If you have taken your kids through my book, Honor and Shame in the Bible, you probably had a pretty good laugh at my whole 4th of July letter to somebody from another culture, and I think maybe I said from another planet. You know, we just naturally assume that everybody knows what we know. So, first of all, let's look at the language that's being used. Okay, so then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. First of all, when you read the kingdom of heaven, I don't want you to think about heaven as a place far from here. I want you to think about the reign of God invading the earth through the kingship of Messiah. And I will be teaching about that a lot more when we get to the Gospel of Mark, because he is all about the greater exodus at the cross and the kingdom here on earth. But we don't have time to lay the foundation about that right now. Now, I'm using the ESV, the English Standard Versions, but some versions translate virgins as bridesmaids, but this is not appropriate to the culture or to the language. And it certainly, even if it was, it certainly wouldn't mean to them what it means to us. First of all, the word is parthenos, and it always translates as virgin or a nubile, marriageable young girl who, in that culture, had better be a virgin or the whole family's ruined. Since Yeshua is not casting aspersions on their virtue, they are virgins and not just marriageable, and I will explain why as we go along. Lamps. I'm not happy with the ESV here. You know, no interpretation's perfect. And interpretation, no translation is perfect. No interpretation's perfect either, except for all of Yeshua's interpretations, okay? The Greek word is lampas. And it shouldn't be confused with the lamps in Matthew 5 that can be kept under a bushel, which is linchos. Oh, I probably said that wrong. It's the type of handheld lamp that you see in souvenir shops in Israel. They barely lit a step in front of you, but lampas, that's more of a torch. Actually, it pretty much is a torch. I think about it. So I don't want you to think about girls with little handheld lamps looking at the ground, trying to see what's in front of their feet and hoping they don't bump into each other and spill hot oil all over each other, because that would be bad. This is a procession with torches, okay? And they're going out to meet the bridegroom, so this is a big deal. So yeah, this is a well-lit thing. This is an honor guard, all right? This is a celebration, and in Greco-Roman culture, you know, these would be virtuous girls. This was an honorable position. This was a big deal. This is an honor for these young girls. Anyway, from now on, I will be subbing in torch for lamp, just so you know. Not trying to I'm just trying to make it a little bit more accurate for the context. But they aren't, these girls, they aren't associated with the bride, who's never mentioned. A lot of people just assume that they're there for the bride, because when we hear the words bridesmaids, I think the RSNV might translate it that way, I can't remember. But when we think of bridesmaids, we think of women who are there to escort the bride. No, she's never mentioned, not once. See, no. They are going out to meet the bridegroom. Now, in Greco-Roman culture, of course, Greco-Roman culture is in the same era, and so it's very easily argued that they would have the same sort of marriage procession. It's not like it's pagan or anything. It's just, it's torches. It's girls carrying torches, you know. So in Greco-Roman culture, these girls could be, the virgins could be the servant girls of a wealthy house. After all, there are 10 servants, so this wouldn't be a pauper bridegroom if they are servants and not just virgins from the community. It's hard to imagine, frankly, the parents of young virgins allowing them to go out unescorted in the middle of the night to meet another family's son, but if they are household servants, it makes sense. And it ties in with the concept of the previous parable and the next, that again, we are probably dealing with slaves who were, by definition, members of the household, because Roman households always included the slaves, and so did Jewish household. It's a cultural thing. It's Greco-Roman culture, and Jewish culture was very Greco-Roman at this time. This is my theory, again. I can't prove it. Don't quote me on saying I have concrete evidence or anything like that. I can prove that in Greco-Roman culture they did this. I have documentation for that. I can't tell you, I don't have a Jewish document, all right? From the first century saying they did this. But, you know, it's all cool. We, There's just some things that we straight up know about the first century, and even more that we don't, but, you know, we just have to admit it. There are, however, things we can rule out based on the cultures compared to our own, like the bridesmaids belonging to the bride. Just, it isn't there. Okay, then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their torches and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, and 5 of them were wise. I like the way R.T. France does. He says 5 of them were silly, and 5 were clever. For when the foolish took their torches, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their torches. So these girls were given torches, and only 5 of them were clever enough to take extra oil with them. These types of torches would burn for only like 15 minutes. Tops. So you can see why they would need to, you know, replenish them often. Now, if they have gone out to wait for their master's son in order to give him an honorable escort to go to the bride's house and to come back, they are perhaps waiting for him to come back outside with his bride to go back to the main event, the wedding banquet at his father's house. You know, the text isn't clear, and it actually doesn't matter. What matters is that they had a job that they needed to be diligent about doing and to be prepared for. Well, I mean, how does this tie into what we've been doing? We need to be ready. Therefore, be yourself, you know, be ready. What was the verse? Therefore, you must also be ready, is how the ESV renders it. They had one job, and their job was to be ready. Okay? Now, we can already see that only half were diligent and prepared to do the job. Only half were living in a state of readiness the way we saw in the parable of the faithful and wise servant who was always doing his master's business all the time, as opposed to the other one who was being a gooberhead and messing around. All right. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. Okay. Wise and foolish both became drowsy and fell asleep. Falling asleep here is not about virtue, as they're all virgins, and not about wisdom, as both the wise and the silly slept. As R.T. France points out in his NICNT commentary on the Gospel of Matthew, which is excellent, and if you don't mind reading something that's 1,119 pages long, which I just finished, man, it's amazing. It's amazing. Anyway, he says this: we can't live on constant red alert, and especially not for 2,000 years. Life must go on while we wait for our master to return. And part of that life is obviously sleeping at proper times, because otherwise we die. So we shouldn't read too much into their falling asleep. Remember from last week and from my earlier teaching on the parable of four soils, parables will not line up perfectly with the lesson, and they aren't supposed to. We can't force an ancient teaching method into our modern ideas about how everything has to be accurate and line up just so. Yeshua is painting a picture, not taking one. But, like I said, the girls are asleep. There aren't 5 filled with the Holy Spirit who stayed awake or who were commandment keepers and stayed awake while the sinners slept. Sometimes we like to add our own agendas into the text, but in this case, it's definitely a distraction from the message. And, you know, our agendas are always very convenient. You know, it's whatever we do or whatever we have. And we say, oh, because I'm one of the wise virgins, you know. I'm not one of those foolish virgins, so whatever I'm doing, follow me, boys. All right, going back to the parable. But at midnight, there was a cry. Here is the bridegroom! Come out to meet him! Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their torches. Now, for whatever reason, the delayed bridegroom shows up. Well, I mean, not for whatever reason he shows up. He was going to show up. But, you know, for whatever reason he was delayed. We don't know why. You know, and the girls are sent out to meet him with their torches lit in celebration in order to honor him, to escort him, and presumably his bride, to the wedding feast. If there's no bride at this point, we've got some problems. This was their one job, to be ready, to honor him when he came, and to light his way to the party in style. So what did that require? One, it required having a torch. Now, everybody did that. Everybody brought their torches. Nobody failed at that part. But not everyone was enduring. Not everyone was prepared to endure. They didn't bring, you know, the oil that they just weren't prepared to keep going, and like they weren't being little Energizer bunnies. All right. So all the virgins, wise and silly, woke right up and got to work on their torches, which had undoubtedly burned out, as I don't know of any group of girls who can fall asleep within 15 minutes of lighting their torches. Unless, of course, they put them out before drifting off. But again, doesn't matter. This didn't really happen. This is a story to relate a point. Readiness is about always being prepared, not about being woke, as, you know, the modern social warriors would tell us, and not about having stuff that you, not about having stuff that you may or may not need in the future. It's about being prepared for the job that you know you have to do. It's about focus. It's doing what we absolutely know needs to be done. In this case, the girls were serving as escorts of the bridegroom to his wedding feast. That job meant they had a few things they needed. One, they needed their virtue intact. They needed wedding garments. We know this from other parables. They needed the torches. And they needed the extra oil. All of the virgins had the first three things. I mean, the garments are culturally assumed. But not all had the oil needed if the wait was longer than expected. I will talk about this more later on, but let's get on with the parable. Oh, no. Yeah. Okay. Starting in chapter 25, verse 7, Matthew. Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. Now, trimming your lamps, you know, trimming your lamp is trimming. I said I was going to do torches. Trimming your torch is not the same as trimming a lamp. Trimming a lamp would be, you know, maintaining your wick. But with one of these torches, it was almost like, it's like one of those ones you kind of like something you would see in a movie. But there was a bowl and it would be, you know, they would have oil in it and they would have fabric of some sort. And they would have to clean out the burned and dead fabric so that they could restart their lamp. And it seems from the context here that's they're saying our lamps are going out. Now, obviously, they didn't just sleep for 15 minutes. Their lamps weren't lit when they got up. What's happening, it sounds to me like they're trying to relight them after maintaining them, but they're going right out. I mean, it's not that they don't have enough. They don't even have enough to get the darn thing lighted and to stay lit in the first place. And so, of course, the wise virgins are being wise. And, oh, we're going to get to that in just a few minutes when we continue. But we're coming up against the half hour here. hope this is making sense to you, and I will see you in just a few minutes. Hi, I'm Tyler Don Rosenquist, and welcome back to Character in Context. And this week we have been discussing the second of the readiness parables of Matthew 24 and 25. The disciples, and by extension us, were commanded to live in a state of readiness until our master's return. And then he gives four parable teachings, talking about how we are expected to do that, and I find them very comforting. You know, they dispel a lot of illusions, but the parables have to be taken in context with living in a state of readiness, and they also have to be taken in context with one another. So you've got the four parables, and they're a unit. They're really unit. I wish that they hadn't put them in separate chapters, because they don't belong in separate chapters. But, you know, we like chapters. So, we'll go back to we're starting in Matthew 25, verse 7 now. Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." So, as I was talking about just before the break, they've all performed maintenance on their torches, but because the foolish virgins, they did not bring any extra oil. They don't even have enough oil in their bowls now to keep their torches relit. So it's that serious. It's not that they have a little bit and it's going to go out soon. It's like, it's not even lighting now. It's not even staying lit. This is a dire circumstance because, like I said, they are the groom's honor guard. If this is to be reckoned as a typical Greco-Roman wedding processional where young virgins with torches are escorting either the groom to the bride's house or the groom and the bride back from the bride's house to the wedding ceremony. So they have one of these processions. I'm sure it was very beautiful. It was a great honor to be chosen for one of these. Now, all the virgins, both wise and foolish, knew what they had to do and got to work once they heard the shout. It's important for us to know that they weren't clueless. They knew the mechanics, but they were lacking what made the mechanics meaningful. Without extra oil, it didn't matter how well prepared their torches were. No oil meant no lit torch, which meant they couldn't do their job, even after all their preparation and all their faithful waiting. And they pleaded, the foolish pleaded with the wise who had brought oil. You know, our lamps won't light. Or our torches won't light. I'm trying to do this with better context. Our torches won't light. Please give us some of yours. Now remember what I was saying the last time. These things would only hold about enough oil to keep the darn thing burning for 15 minutes. That is not a long time. Probably more than enough to get from one house to the other, but if there were any more delays, their torches would all be going out on the way, and they would all be shamed. And the groom would be shamed. But, okay, verse 9. But the wise answered, saying, "Since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves." And of course, we're going like, well, this is the middle of the night. Virgins are not going to be wandering the city in the middle of the night to go buy oil. But again, this is a parable. This isn't supposed to be realistic. No virgin would be out alone, even with other virgins, because they would be open to accusation. No. But it's a story. It's okay. So the wise virgins have heard the shout, and they know the bridegroom is coming. But they still need to escort him and his bride to the wedding feast. They can't assume that they have enough if there is still another delay or if the procession takes longer than expected. Their honor within the community hinges on how well they serve and honor the bridegroom. And if all the virgins together only have enough oil to get him halfway home in style and they've all failed, they will all be branded as foolish, and more than that, unsuitable for the responsibility of marriage themselves. And that, in that culture, for a girl is a fate worse than death. It would be a disaster. So the wise aren't being cruel. They're not being selfish. They are making sure that they can do their job. Someone needs to. And the wise can't magically ensure that there will be enough oil otherwise. Okay, verse 10. And while they were going to buy, this is the foolish ones, the bridegroom came. And those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Okay, so the shout happened a few verses ago. They got their torches ready, because they had to wake up. They got their torches ready. The bridegroom comes. They're ready. They're prepared. They've been living ready, even though they went to sleep. I mean, you know, sleep happens. We got to sleep. They're never rebuked for sleeping. Point is that they were ready. So the foolish virgins, virtuous though they were virtuous. They were virgins. Had to go out in the middle of the night to buy more oil for their torches. And, you know, like I just said, this, of course, is pure fiction, but it isn't supposed to be entirely accurate. Girls out by themselves in the middle of the night, again, is unthinkable, exposing them to shame and slander and ruin and worse. But like I said, he's painting a picture. He's not making a documentary here. Now, while they were off buying, the wedding escort left without them, probably without giving a second thought to them. You know, although the bridegroom was undoubtedly irked that half of his wedding party was absent, he must have been wondering why they would dishonor him like that. But life must go on, and the wedding feast must be attended. So off they went, the whole lot of them. The bridegroom, the bride, supposedly, I should imagine, and five wise virgins with their torches lit. And it was in the night, so it was probably quite the sight. Now, the banquet, you know, was like the main event of these. You know, it didn't get better. Festivals and weddings, okay? That was the life of communities in the ancient world. Not being able to go to the banquet was a nightmare for a community member, and especially for a member of the groom's escort. Oh my gosh, can you even imagine? It's like the social event of the season, and they can't go. But the door was shut. Which also would not have happened in antiquity, where people were notoriously late, and it just didn't matter. It's Asian culture, okay? But remember, parables don't usually completely line up with reality, but with the lesson being taught, and it said at the beginning, what does it say? In the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of heaven will be like. So he's painting a picture. He's not saying the kingdom of heaven is exactly the way we do things now. He's saying the kingdom of heaven will be like. It will be like this fictional situation that I'm presenting now that would never happen, but this is how it will be like. Verse 11. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. Of course, Lord is curious. It's Master, Master, open to us. Realizing that they were locked out of the social event of the season, and if they were slave girls in the household, it's even worse. Oh my gosh, can you imagine? But if they weren't slave girls, marriageable men would see them, and they were supposed to be playing key, honored roles. You know, the foolish virgins, who are still virgins, plead with the bridegroom to allow them entrance, but they shamed him through their actions. This is all about honor and shame at this point, the primary underlying value of the ancient Mediterranean world and two-thirds of the world today. Asian cultures, Islamic cultures, South America, Africa, a lot of the world operates by honor and shame, and including American high schools. And if you were unpopular like me, you know it's true. Honor was serious business, and so was snubbing someone. The bridegroom likely didn't stop to inquire why the girls were absent, as that would have brought attention to their snubbing of him, or their supposed snubbing of him. He just escorted his bride to the banquet with those young ladies who made sure that they could honor him, and they all went inside. So, of course, shamed on his own wedding day, the bridegroom is, of course, going to have some choice words for the young ladies who did the shaming. They are calling out Kyrios to him, honoring him as Lord with their words, but they were unprepared to honor him with their actions when it mattered. And it's not like they didn't have time ahead of time to prepare. They did. But they didn't. All he needed was a flask of stinking oil. Verse 12, but he answered, truly, I say to you, I do not know you. Now, we talked about this 2 weeks ago. Didn't know them? Of course he knew who they were. They were members of his escort. No, this has nothing to do with not recognizing the girls, because in this culture, people would have been coming and going, and the girls would not have been turned away as long as they were from honorable families or member of the extended household, and they were wearing the proper garments. No, this was an ancient form of insult. You snubbed me, and so I will not acknowledge knowing you. Simple as that. He didn't forget who they were. He was dishonoring them by disassociating himself from them. Now, the last line, watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. And if the disciples know neither the day or the hour, I guarantee you that we don't stand a chance. You know, snowball's chance at H-E double hockey sticks, or in Texas or somewhere like that. No, I'm not saying Texas is hell. Well, Dallas in the summer, pretty much. Yeah, San Antonio, definitely. Whew! Okay. Anyway, watch therefore, for you do not know the day nor the hour. So again, Yeshua tells the 12, his inner circle. You know, well, actually including his inner circle, because his inner circle was Peter and James and John, that they know neither the day nor the hour, backing up what he said in Matthew 24 about not even himself knowing, but only the Father. What does this mean? It means that from the beginning with the hour, from beginning with the hour that we're called, that we must always be prepared to the best of our ability according to our maturity at the time. But how are we to be prepared? I mean, let's go back to the first of these four parables. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master has set over his household to give him their food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find doing so when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and begins to beat his fellow servants and eats and drinks with drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him and an hour that he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and put him with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And again, we have this one. This one comes right after. So, then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their torches and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, and 5 of them were wise. For when the foolish took their torches, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their torches. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. But at midnight there was a cry, "Here is the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "Since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves." And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came. And those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he answered, "Truly I say to you, I do not know you." That's in an oath formula, by the way. "Truly I say to you," that's an oath formula. This is permanent. He is disassociating himself from them permanently. "Watch therefore, for you do not know the day nor the hour." Now, the parable of the virgins isn't exactly the same, but addresses the opposite sides of the same frivolous, lackadaisical attitude. People acting as though their Lord is never coming back, and so their behavior doesn't matter in how they treat their servants on one hand, as we see with the first parable. And on the other hand, the foolish virgins acting as though he will come back soon enough that they don't need to be prepared at all, which should make people who are depending on the rapture really nervous. Okay? Man, that reminds me of a story. I wonder if I should tell it. The only difference between the two types of girls was some brought oil and some didn't. In every other respect, they were exactly the same. Being consigned to the place of the hypocrites is exactly the same picture, you know, in the first parable as being shut out of the wedding banquet in the second parable. There is weeping and gnashing of teeth in the first parable. You know, even though it's not mentioned in the second parable, those girls are now shamed and shut out. And as we talked about 2 weeks ago, weeping and gnashing of teeth is the visceral feeling of rejection in a society where community is everything. And this will not be forgotten. And it's not like they can just go home and watch TV. Now, the wicked servant behaved as though the end would never come, while the girls presumed too much because maybe they didn't want to prepare, or maybe they just weren't taking the job as seriously as they needed to. Truth is, we really don't know. And it doesn't matter because the result is exactly the same. Now, you know, what are some of the... I've seen a lot of interpretations of this parable that take it in places where the context of the whole being ready and the four parables together plus the introductory information, it just... I've just seen some strange ideas. I think one of the strangest is I once heard about a teaching. I wasn't going to sit through the 7 hours of it, where... they claimed that in this parable, the bride was the Jews and the bridesmaids were the Gentiles. But I want you to think about this. One, the bride is never mentioned. Two, why would Yeshua be telling his Jewish disciples, because he just happened to be Jewish and everyone pretty much he associated with was Jewish, why would he be giving them a parable telling them to be ready if, as the bride isn't even portrayed as needing to be ready, but instead it's the Gentile wedding escort? Again, you know, you get into these things where we're reading into the parable stuff that's not there. The bride is not in the parable. The bride doesn't enter into it. The only thing that does enter into it is the bridegroom, who is the master one way or the other, whether these are girls from the community or whether he is, you know, their master's son or their master himself. And they have a job to do to honor him. It's just about the bridegroom and these virgins. So when we read more into it, we get in trouble. And I'm not fond of any teachings that that draw distinctions that somehow, you know, the Jewish people, the Jewish believers are the bride and the Gentiles are somehow their slaves. And you know, that's what it boils down to with that. One other thing we don't see is, and I see this in interpretations of this, this isn't about woke people and asleep people, because they were all awake at the same time, they were all asleep at the same time, so this doesn't go there. I've seen this be about denominations, where some denominations are the wise virgins and some denominations are the foolish virgins, but you know, these were all virgins. This is about individuals. This is about individual choices to be ready and not about denominations, not about doctrines. It's about doing what we're called to do and living in readiness for our master's return. Some people will make this about prepping. You know, saying, oh, well, having the oil means that you've stockpiled goods. But the thing was, they didn't need the stockpiled oil until, bam, the master's here. We're going into the wedding feast. So that doesn't work either. And we've got to remember that for the majority of the ancient world, and even the majority of the modern world, we're talking about people who were very, very impoverished. They had no refrigerators, they had no freezers, they didn't have cans, they didn't have any real way to store anything for a long time. They were also mostly subsistence farmers, if they had land at all, which means they ate whatever they grew, and if it didn't grow next year, they were in big trouble. They didn't have the money to stockpile stuff. They barely had enough money to pay their taxes, their temple taxes, their tithes, and the huge taxes they had to pay to the Romans. You know, they didn't have any money, and they didn't have any space to store stuff either, and it would have gone bad before they could ever use it. And we also can't say it's about people who are reading the prophecies and looking at the news. That we can't say those are the wise virgins as opposed to the foolish virgins, because, again, in ancient times, they didn't have 24-hour news. We take it for, you know, and frankly, I mean, how many times, I'm 50 now, can't even tell you how many times I have seen, well, these people are the 10 horns, and well, some of them are dead now, you know, and now some people are saying, oh, well, this other group is the 10 horns, and, you know, no one could keep watch and predict his return or check for texts or anything like that. It can't be the Holy Spirit, which is a very popular teaching in the Pentecostal and charismatic movements, because you wouldn't need a refill. And they all had oil at the beginning. Okay? It was the refill that they needed. It can't be commandment keeping, because none of them broke any commandments. If they were virgins, it means they were honorable Jewish girls who were chosen for their virtue to represent, you know, to honor the groom. So these weren't commandment breakers. You know, so, but again, over and over again, we're going to see this pattern. Living a life of readiness is about, one, serving others, as in the first parable, not abusing them, not acting like you're the master. This is what the wicked servant did. And two, honoring and serving God, as we see in the second parable, no matter how long it takes, focusing on his needs, not assuming he's going to come back in the next 5 minutes or 15. Because that's how much oil they had. and not on focusing on our own needs or making assumptions, being presumptuous, being lazy, whatever those virgins were doing, we just don't know. Anyway, that's it for this week, and I'll see you next week. We will talk about the parable of the talents. In the meantime, have a great week studying the scripture as a family. Bye-bye now.